This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
Brian Sue, friend of Alberta, kept texting me. He was calling this hashtag GP fistfight because he was just convinced that Sammy and Ochoa were going to have a massive blow up over something.
Welcome to the A-Team podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for mise they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
Anything that costs a shit ton of mana, you're just like, bang! And they're like, fuck. How does that go? Bang! Fuck.
Jay Boosh.
And that's like the hyper angle. I never want to play in another GP again. I never want to play in another GP.
Jeremy.
And you're the reason I play Magic today. I died. I was like just melting on the inside like that. I have inspired this kid to play Magic.
And Matt.
So I'm having this conversation with this guy in Chile about my deck, and then I'm getting pizza from a guy in Canada. Like, Magic is fucking weird.
And now, the A-Team.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A-Team 295. I am Matt Mendoza, and I'm back. Sorry I was gone last week. KYT is really bad about telling you guys what everybody's been up to, but I was gone for a death in the family to Arkansas last week, so I apologize for not being here to do the contest, but don't fret. I'll be here. I'm here for the contest. And with me this week, as always, or not as always, because you've been in Portugal, a very jet-lagged Jeremy Schofield.
Hello, 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 hello. Hola, 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 hola.
Is hola hello in Portuguese?
Yes, yes, that is one of the words I learned.
Okay. What words did you learn?
I learned Sagres, which is a brand of beer.
Okay.
I learned Alto because they sell the beers in a mini size and a regular size, and Alto is tall, so usually after I say Sagres, then they ask me mini, and I say Alto. Atamene, which is see you tomorrow. Ciao, which is just ciao, you know, bye. What else did I learn? I don't know. It's all stuff that's kind of as it comes up.
Okay.
I was getting to the point where I could go to a food court and order my food, and it worked out, so that was good. Deutsch, that's two. That was the amount that the barber would ask me to give me. Like, he was doing like a straight razor shave. Cost $2. I went like four or five times to this guy to get a shave. He'd spend like 25 minutes shaving my face and then ask for $2. It just was not right.
That seems like good value.
Yeah, absolutely. You go for an espresso and it's 60 cents.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it was That's wild. Happened. The first, we get there and we go for breakfast and we get three espressos, a bottled drink that's kind of like a little Perrier thing, a couple pastries, and some juice for my daughter, and it was like $6.
All right. Well, it sounds like I need to go to Portugal sometime. So
yes, absolutely.
Also with us this week.
Are there other people?
Canadian. Yeah, we've got a couple other guests with us this week. Jeremy, Jay, I have to apologize. I screwed up with scheduling, and Jay is not on the cast this week. And KYT is actually gone testing for the WMCQ, so he should actually have some Magic content for once for the podcast next week. But
he doesn't have Magic content?
Doug Potter, how's it going?
Oh, hey, what's up? I always thought it was Matt the Content Mendoza, but I'm realizing now it's actually Matt the Contest Mendoza. So,
hey-o!
I'm happy to hear if I went three in a row, and I'm happy to be here.
Ooh, you may be dethroned this week.
I mean, three in a row. Spoilers.
Yeah.
I won two contests in a row while you were in Portugal.
Go away and this is what they let happen.
It's absolutely true. I don't really know what I can say other than I'm an absolute sicko.
So, Doug, how did you finish in Atlantic City? Or not Atlantic City.
Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, yeah.
Yeah, my team went 11 wins, 3 losses. So
what was your spot?
My spot was ninth place. Tiebreaks.
Okay. Cool. And our other guest from 3 places in the standings above old Doug Potter.
Wow.
James Mellish, how's it going?
It's going great.
So, a little bit of backstory. James and I go back to my St. Louis days. He met me in the shop that I managed, and we became very, very fast and close friends. And I was super psyched to have to see two of my friends, Doug and James, tear it up at the GP this weekend. I had to have them on the cast this week to talk about Limited, to talk about Team Constructed or Team Sealed and all that stuff. So let's start with a question for you guys. So James, you slayed pro team after pro team after pro team. Now, Doug, was your experience much the same way? Or is that how most team GPs go?
Well, we beat every pro team we played, but we actually didn't play as many pro teams, I would say, than pro team after pro team after pro team insinuates.
Okay.
We played against like 2 pro teams.
I don't know, James, who did you play? Like, it was gross. You're
Well, out of the 14 rounds we played 8 pro teams. So, I have to actually go back to my statuses that I made. So on day 2, we played we beat Ben Stark, Ifro, and Cuneo. And then we beat Sari, Doug, and Ochoa, and Sammy.
Hey, you just called me a pro team, so you don't need to apologize.
Well, if Ochoa is on your team and he's played in the World Championship before, I definitely consider that a pro team.
Listen, we're just going to go with Doug Potter pro team. That's all we need to.
Absolutely. What are you doing?
I mean, Sammy was there too.
Yeah, exactly. Sammy was there too.
This guy. No respect.
We got Sammy.
No respect.
Yeah, that's well, it's Canadians. You know, he calls out the single American. I see how it is. Look, and all so I have I'm to say a- is enjoy your guys' election. Yeah. Sunny's so shiny down there. Is it?
So, James, who else did you play? Ignoring Jeremy's comments.
On day 1, we lost to, in round 3, some guys from East West Bowl. And then we beat Shahar Shenhar, Matt Costa, and Brock Parker. And then after them, we beat Jacob Wilson, Matt Nassen, Sam Pardee. And then later in the day, we played against Matthias Hunt, Ross Miriam, and Jasper Johnson Epstein. And then I don't really know much of his history or whatever, but in the last round we played against Ralph Batesh and a couple of other guys, and I know that Ralph Batesh won Grand Prix Detroit, so that's something.
Yeah. So Doug, how does your day compare? How did your guys' tournament compare?
We did a lot of winning in a lot of rounds that were against people that we recognized the names of, and did a lot of losing in rounds where we didn't recognize the names. It felt like we played like Calcano or Lox's team. We played against, I'm actually drawing a blank. I don't remember all the names. It was mostly a lot of like mid-level grinder type players. So I apologize. I don't have the names on hand, nor did I feel it necessary to like tweet who I played against. Cause like, I'm a believer that at that level, it's just like a bunch of players that are like really good.
Yeah.
It's all kind of a wash. You actually texted me about this during it, and I was kind of like, I mean, I don't really know who we've been playing. We've just been playing some Magic. Like,
well, wait, I try not to act like you've been there before. It's okay.
Well, yeah. No, I really think that extra weight into who you're against and how you feel about being against people that you're like thinking might be better than you and stacking it up like that, I just think it's a really detrimental thought process personally. So I don't know.
Oh no, I fully agree. And so I am actually the opposite where, because of the fact that, you know, like I've mostly just been, you know, this was, I think like my sixth or maybe I think it was my sixth GP ever. So when you put that in like context or whatever, it feels like a bigger deal to say to like your friends back home, like, oh, you played against these pro players. So I would get excited when we'd get paired against the pros because I was like, oh, it makes the story better when we beat them. So I would get excited when we would check the pairings and it was another like high level team or whatever.
Yeah. Totally. So let's talk about the limited format. What did you guys observe? Doug, your deck was basically Angel's Tribal.
Yeah, my day two deck was very good. My day one deck was pretty close to a steaming pile. The main thing that I learned about this team, limited format playing with Ochoa specifically, is we talked a lot about just trying to find the most synergistic main deck that we can build, because there's so many options post sideboard. You can build these decks so many different ways. You can have a green, black, blue deck, for example, like Sammy's on day two, that you can choose to configure as a Delirium deck, or you can choose to configure as a merge deck, or you can choose to configure as a mid-range kind of grindy deck or a control deck. And you're going to be forced to cut like really good cards in Team Sealed always. Like that's just a part of the build process. So the sooner you can identify the most synergistic version of your color combination, you kind of save a lot of time. And another thing about this team limited format is there's a lot of ways to slash post sideboard. So for example, on day one, Ochoa played a blue-black control deck and we gave him the Mockery of Nature instead of our green deck. We gave him the Spreading Flames instead of our blue-red spells deck because he's a control deck that's going to go to the late game. So he can take advantage of these kind of surprise cards post-sideboard. And in the match against Calcano, Arilox, and Ben Friedman, it was all coming down to Ochoa and Calcano's game three, and he deployed both Mockery of Nature and Spreading Flames in that game to great effect. So that was kind of a big eye-opener for me personally. I've done two other Team Sealeds before, and it did cash both, but we didn't think about it on the same level. I definitely feel like my brain expanded teaming with Sammy, like I'd say Sammy especially, because he's very vocal and he's insanely good at Magic. So is
it a case where I know with the Team Sealeds that we've done, when the decks get built, you have like somebody who kind of grabs all the cards and starts hoarding the cards. Like, how did you guys actually get through the build? Does somebody take a lead role and other people are kind of grabbing colors, or is it a case of you kind of go through each color as a team, or what's going on there? Does one person kind of divvy out and kind of give people projects to work with, like you were saying, you know, blue green for instance? Is that something that Ochoa or Sammy kind of identified blue green and then handed it off to you or whoever the case may be to go through and figure out what that blue green deck looks like? Or was that something that you did as more of a full-on team type?
Well, I'll share Ark's experience quickly, and then definitely James can share his team as well. But I normally did it more kind of what you described in my previous two Team Sealeds. But we met Friday early. They made sure that I flew in early so we could get in some testing. I actually had to leave at like 10 p.m. the night before and do three flights in a Greyhound. It was quite the journey, this little Carmen Sandiego here flew. But so when we showed up, we basically, there weren't really opponents to play. We didn't want to play a side tournament because it's just so much negative equity of time. So what we did was we just cracked packs, timed an hour, built it, and we could only go up until like the eight minute left mark because we would have to theoretically start registering. And then how do we do? Assess, discuss what we did, and improve. And so over like a few builds, we actually started to build some chemistry. But the first thing that we chose to do, and this could be different for everyone, but it's something that Sammy loves doing and David was all about as well, is identify the reasons you're in a particular color. Those we'd call like your A cards. Then identify your B cards, which are cards that just will make a lot of main decks in sealed because they're just good cards. And then identify the C cards of that color. So, for example, my white deck, which I didn't actually build. It got handed off to me after the build process. But the white deck obviously had Bruna, Gisela, Avacyn, Selfless Spirit, Choking Restraints. These are A cards that you just kind of put up in a top row per color to see these are the reasons you want to play white. Then the B row is full of all of your, you know, role player type cards. They're fine, Wretched Griffs, maybe Ironclad Slayers.
Maybe removal spells.
Sure, whatever aren't like the reason you want to be white. And then your C's are just your filler. And then what we would do is we would quickly say, like, okay, what is black trying to do? Okay, we have like a sub-zombie theme in this black. We have a lot of emerge stuff. There's not much delirium payoff. There's a little amount of vampires in black. What is red trying to do? Okay, red is tons of madness but no enablers. That's good to note. And we just have a quick like formal group discussion about what each color A and B specifically was trying to tell us to do. Then we would split them into decks and just kind of each work on getting a shell. And we would change iterations. Like we wouldn't just say, well, it's obviously a white-blue deck. We didn't get blue in our white deck on day two until maybe 15 minutes left in the build because we were trying to identify what the weaknesses of the white deck were. It obviously had a lot of strengths, but tempo was an interaction with two weaknesses. Well, we were able to add two drag unders and a selfless spirit in blue. That kind of added the tempo and disruption elements a little bit. So that's kind of what we did. And then we would keep checking back in with each other and giving advice, and then ultimately you just have to kind of make a decision. Okay, we're going to cut three really playable cards from the blue-black control deck to add two Terrarians main deck just to smooth out the mana because it's going to be a 10-7 deck, or we're going to, you know, choose to cut these three really playable red-black madness cards because they're not good against every opponent, they're good against some opponents, and we'll just board them in even though they're like very good cards. So that's kind of how it works for us.
Okay. And James, how did yours go? You had two players that you had played with before in your Cube League, but had not played with in this capacity. How did that kind of play into everything?
Well, they knew from the outset, obviously, that I was by far the most experienced player competitively. You know, like Matt out of my team. That'll be confusing. Matt Elkers from my sealed team. I'll just call him Elkers, I guess, to shore that up. But so he has played in probably he's played in one GP ever and basically no other like competitive event that would be bigger than like an FNM, you know. But he only plays limited, so that was something that put him on the map, and he's a goofy sort of fun-loving guy. So I figured if we were going to scrub out, at least I was going to have somebody who amused me along the ride. So, and then Eric has also played, I believe, in just one GP, pretty much like the same background as Matt, and also again only plays limited, but has probably more of an analytical mind than Elkers does, I would say. You know, Matt Elkers doesn't spend that much time analyzing the game in his free time. He just sort of plays. But anyway, I had actually very little experience with this format. I hadn't played it at all since the pre-release up until the week before the event. I lost in the semifinals of a sealed PPTQ, realized the format was really fun, so I decided that I wanted to go and play in Louisville, like scrapped together this team, played in some Phantom queues on Magic Online and did very well as my practice, did one team practice, which actually our build process was very similar to what Doug described, where we separated the, I guess, like tiers of playability. But then from there, on day one and day two, we pretty much had identified that each of us had a like niche or archetype of deck that we were much better with than anything else. So we just, when we sat down for deck building, We said, you know, Elkers, you build the aggro deck out of the pool, like the absolute fastest thing, because that's his area of expertise in limited. I was going to build the emerge deck, which we had emerge both days, and that was the deck that I basically played in every single sealed event that I'd played up until the tournament. In my opinion, I don't know what the consensus is supposed to be. I didn't read articles or anything, but to me, it seemed like the strongest archetype in the format, just because as long as you can survive until turn four without taking too much damage, you just absolutely take over and you just have so much gas if you built it right. And then Eric, he likes to play sort of control-ish decks, so he would play the mid-range deck with the most removal. So we would have Matt try to just kill people as fast as possible. I was playing just the emerge deck, whatever the best emerge deck was out of our pool. And then Eric was just playing removal.deck with a couple of sweet finishers or whatever that were left over from the pool. And that process of just dividing up and putting those decks together, and then as a group going over each person's build and talking about it, and, you know, developing consensuses on what cards actually should be changed from that initial build, and so on and so forth. That went really smoothly. We had no arguments or big disagreements or whatever, which I think is probably the number one thing that kills people in team events, is that they sort of get tilted before they even start playing, and then they're like done for the day because they've had this outside element sort of ruin their ability to play at their best and be focused. But we worked really, really well as a team, and I think that's what gave us the most success, was we just never really questioned each other and were very comfortable with each other, even though we hadn't been in that setting before.
I like that you kind of talk about the whole tilt factor and what happened. Like, that was one of the things, the last team seal that I was in, one of our members tilted off in round two, and we couldn't get him back on track. And we tried to, you know, sit him down and talk to him, but he just wasn't interested in playing things out. He was conceding early. He was doing stuff like that where he just wasn't in it anymore. And he was just showing up to say that he showed up, but he wasn't in the matches anymore. So it's very interesting, you know, kind of talking about even just how the team's gelling together. And I think that's even a skill, is just to know when your teammates are off, how you can kind of bring them back in line, you know, just to kind of touch on that.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely a big part of what I had in my thought process going into forming my team. And it was the first thing that I said when we sat down for our like practice builds or whatever before the tournament on Thursday night, is I said to the guys, I said, number one thing is when we're doing this whole tournament and when we're building every phase of this event, we have to remain civil and clear-headed the entire time. You know, if you start to disagree with somebody, you know, just calm down. Everyone that's involved in the argument, calm down and make sure to not feel the pressure of the clock. You know, an hour is actually a really long time, so you don't have to get caught up in the time constraint, and just make sure to stay focused and stay confident. And that was sort of my role throughout the whole weekend, was like the coach, where between every single round, I was just giving these little pep talks for morale of, you know, like what went right, what went wrong in the previous round, and how we could just continue to improve over the rest of the day. And sort of just the little sentences and phrases that make people feel strong going into the next round, where you just say, like, listen, our decks are insane, like objectively insane. We're going to beat people. We aren't going to lose. Like, it doesn't matter who they are. We're not bad players, and we have great decks, and we have good chemistry. So we have all the elements we need to succeed in this event, and let's keep doing it. And we did.
Ba-ba-ba-ba.
Sweet. And Doug, how does that sort of, what James said, how does that sort of fit into your experience with more sealed events? Like, you're more of a veteran, and Ochoa is, absolutely. And how many, I don't know how many events Sam AT has played in, but I'm sure it's many. How does that fit in with your observations?
The only thing that James said that I couldn't disagree with more is the fact that an hour is a lot of time. I believe if you're properly discussing and building your decks, that an hour is like not close to enough time at all. The only time I feel like an hour can be reasonable is if you just like open a really straightforward pool, which feels very rare to me in all my experience and all my team sealeds that I've done, which is like 3 Grand Prix, probably like 6 or 7 local events that are team sealed and countless practice drafts. I think one of the big traps I feel like in team sealed is it's so easy to want to build the easy decks, but unless those decks are just chock full of rares and the perfect synergies, like Sammy's deck day one was so easy to build. It was 3 Thermal Alchemists, 2 Galvanic Bombardments, 2 Incendiary Flow, and a bunch of blue Spells Matter cards. Like, that deck was just kind of handed to us, but none of the other 5 decks were. And you may argue that the Angel one was, but the problem was our white was one of our deeper colors, and if you don't split a deep color, you're actually hurting your team. So it was one of the hardest to build for that reason. But everything else I pretty much agree with. You can't argue with your team or you're just destined to lose. You can't worry when you lose. And I've seen, like, I've had opponents even in the tournament that they lose their match and they look over the 2 teammates who are playing games and they'd be like, oh, sorry guys, I blah blah blah. And I'm just looking at them like, why are you apologizing? Your match is still going. Just be positive. Like, when it's over, yeah, sure, feel bad. Like, I at the end of we only lost once on day 2 to James's team, and both games I'm multi 5, and I was like blaming myself for the loss, and the guys were like, what could you have done differently? I was like, I don't know, drawn a land. And they're like, okay, well, how could you have possibly like drawn a land? I was like, I don't know. Like, they're like, so what do you have to apologize for? I was like, well, I don't know. I had the 5-0 deck. I was supposed to 5-0. They're like, yeah, but that doesn't mean you're going to 5-0. Like, just don't worry about it, right? Like, so definitely the positive self-talk stuff and not allowing any arguments are very important. But I don't actually think an hour is close to enough time if you're really exhausting all of your resources and optimizing yourself for the best possible chance to top 4. But that's the only point.
Cool.
I could agree with you. I guess I was saying more like psychologically, to not just to say to them that an hour is a long time, so that they don't, because a lot of people, including myself, when I was going into the event, I was, I even had pre-sleeved all of my potential lands, you know, like 10 of each land, just to save that amount of time in the deck building process. And then I realized that going in, perhaps with that mindset of, you know, like, you can't waste a single second or whatever, that sort of urgency can end up like maybe being the wrong attitude of going into deck building, that just to create the sort of atmosphere that, you know, we can still, I guess, pretending that an hour is a long enough time so that you do look at everything instead of just throwing together that easy deck, like you were saying. Because if you feel like an hour is too short, then you might actually cut corners and it will cost you. But if you try to convince yourself it's long enough to look at everything, then you will.
Cool. And so, Doug, had you played with Ochoa and Sammy T before in a team event like this?
No, not a team event. No, definitely not.
And how was that?
Sammy and I are close, so I knew we gel. Sammy, like, he's incredible at Limited. Like, he was in the race for Draftmaster at the Pro Tour this year, going to the last PT, and he just skipped the PT because sometimes work, you know, and different things. So he definitely would be up there in my estimation of like one of the top 25 Limited players in the world, and it's not close. So I didn't have any
you know, anxiety or whatever about playing with Sammy. He is very assertive, and I like that, because sometimes I'm like, I feel like I want to do this line, and he'll just say, no, it's too aggressive. Just be patient. And I just listen, except one time, but that's a whole other story where I just decided I really think you're wrong on this one, and we had a whole discussion about it later. But the main thing with Ochoa that I wasn't sure about is he has kind of the polar opposite personality of Sammy. Sammy's okay. Very brazen. He's extroverted. He kind of is in your face. I have a great scumbag story, if I can get to it before I have to jump from the call, that involves Sammy in the tournament. Ochoa kind of just, he's mild-mannered. He's soft-spoken. He's intentional with his words. I wasn't sure how it was going to jive. Sammy, I was really impressed with him. He is, you know, a business professional in his career, and also he just decided to be more passive and not as assertive when it came to the group discussions, and that was very helpful to not cause any chaos. Brian Sue, friend of Alberta, kept texting me. He was calling this hashtag GP fist fight because he was just convinced that Sammy and Ochoa were going to have a massive blow up over something. And round like four, we actually came close. Sammy and I were like really urging him to discard a certain card to his looter, and he wanted to discard the other. And it was a kind of a choice of playing a 1/4 that you can sack to get two lands to block a lifelinker for a turn, or playing a 2/4 to get a clue that can double block to kill the lifelinker. So it was kind of this choice between, do you buy yourself a turn or do you just deal with the lifelinker indefinitely? And it was like this argument we had. And after the match, David did take our line. We went on turn two of extra turns. And after the match, he said, can you guys just let me play my match? And we were like, yep, lips will be sealed unless you ask from now on. We don't want to. You know, we don't want to, but it was one of those spots that we really, like, we could see the clock and he couldn't, and we knew we had to be aggressive, and I think that it worked out, and I'm glad that he did respect us enough to listen. So we did actually gel very well. It was a very different experience than playing with friends. I feel like there was less joking and stuff. It was more business. Okay. I felt less bad about my losses because, like, they, you know, these are professional Magic players. They know that, you know, the best pros in the world have like a 67% win rate at the Pro Tour. That means they lose one out of every three matches. You know, like, losing isn't the end all be all. It's more about playing well. And sometimes your deck just will not perform. And sometimes you'll make a blunder early in the game that you won't recover from. Right. And so it was a great experience. Probably, you know, it's right up there for different reasons than my other ones. Playing with best friends is like just a whole other level, I gotta admit, especially doing well with them. Like, I was second in the Swiss after day one in San Jose, the first team sealed back, and that was just a whole other feeling. But I definitely felt more than ever that we actually had a real shot at top four going into this day two, just how our losses had played out and the way that we had our chemistry. And so.
How was it different? Like, how would you describe it from being, being separated from being with teammates rather than best friends?
Like, Sammy and I are pretty close, so that's definitely helped bring the friendship level into it. But I guess to me, can you picture the difference between being in the bridal party at a wedding or being a guest at a wedding? It's like, one of them is you're at the same wedding, right? You're there, yeah. But one of them is like, you're there with these people that you've invested so much time in your life, and you know, it's not the same thing as a wedding by any means, but it's just like, it's like you're on the other side, kind of. When you're with friends, you know, you're going home as friends. You're not as kind of reliant on this experience to define how it went. Like, I honestly felt this pressure, and it was a good pressure. It was a fueling pressure that, you know, I reached out to Ochoa and invited him to test with Sammy and I. I don't know him very well. I have been Facebook friends with him for years. I met LSV at my second Pro Tour. I've team drafted against like Shuhei and a lot of pros, so I kind of have my face out there, but I'm a nobody. And if I just sucked, I feel like this could have been a defining moment in my career one way, honestly. Whereas if I kind of performed at a level of maybe not excellence, but, you know, professionalism and doing my best and improving and being a team player, this could go the other way in my professional Magic career. right? And I'm not saying I'm just going to be able to test on Team Channel Fireball, but you know what I mean, right? It's like, oh yeah, Doug, like, plus also all of his friends would come up between rounds, and that's like every pro in the world, basically, right? So it's just a different experience. I think I preferred Portland with Marcel and Eric, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because they're two of my best friends, and it's like that we're in this together, we're deep. We almost top eighted that tournament or top four. We were real close again, so yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that made sense.
But yeah, that's kind of totally. James, how did your chemistry play out throughout the tournament? I mean, you're playing with people that you've only played with in like kind of at the kitchen table with like no competitive consequences, really.
Pedigree.
Well, I kind of established early on sort of this whole thing of, well, at least from my perspective, I sort of established a paradigm of like, listen, I have like played Magic for longer than both of you, and I played a lot more Magic than both of you. So like in all discussions, my opinion counts for like a vote and a half or whatever. and I think that we all gelled together well, because I guess there are lots of people that are really good at giving advice, but not as good as at taking their own advice. And I think that perhaps all three of us sort of fit that category. Okay. So we needed each other. Like Eric had said in the car afterwards that he felt like this was by far his best performance ever, because he could always turn to me. And when he was like looking at his opening hands and stuff like that, and just be like, so how does this look? And have me tell him, like, are you crazy? You know, like, send that back right away, or, you know, like, snap that off right now. And I know for me personally, I get a lot of sort of adrenaline and anxiety when I'm at major events, not because I'm afraid of failing or whatever, but just because I get so excited about winning. And having two people that I knew next to me really helped just keep me centered and focused, and it sort of helped give that feeling that it was just the kitchen table or whatever. Like one tactic that I kept on using in between rounds on day two was going into day two, I actually hadn't known that it was only going to be 14 rounds total. And then when I found that out, I said, oh, geez, that's nothing. This is just like a weekend PPTQ that we're going to. Like, that's easy. All we have to do, you know, is play five rounds, and then you were in the top four. And so, you know, after we won the first round, I was like, oh, just four rounds to go. And then after we won that, I was like, oh, we're heading into, you know, Friday night draft or whatever. It's just three rounds now, and so on and so forth until the day was over. And I think for them as two players, that sort of shorter events was really their only experience playing competitively. I like to think at least that framing things in that way really helped keep them focused on day two and calm, and it certainly helped me.
Were you able to lean on them in those sort of like decision making moments, like they were able to lean on you?
Yeah, I definitely turned to Matt and Eric lots of times with opening hands or major decisions, especially just because even if you don't really think that you need the help, it does help in the aftermath of that decision to have said, to say to yourself, if it doesn't work out well, you can say, well, I had a second set of eyes and they agreed with me, right? You know, it doesn't sting as badly as if you decide to just do that thing that seems obvious, you get absolutely crushed by some trick or whatever. And then, you know, you have a teammate turn to you and say like, whoa, 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 what just happened? You know, like you just seemingly lost that game out of nowhere. You know, to avoid those situations, I think is really good for the team's overall morale to always have these sort of game turning decisions, have at least two members of the team be a part of them, even if everyone's still like in their games.
Yeah. So, Doug, how long we got you for still?
For a bit. Okay. I'll keep you live updated if that works.
Okay.
Well, it might be all night. Who knows?
Talk about your angel deck.
Angel deck. Let's talk about the scumbag story.
Okay. All right. Fine. Whatever.
Well, both of the stories actually can collide in one beautiful, beautiful round three.
There we go. Two,
if that works.
Sure.
So it's round three, day two. Okay, and we're playing against these guys that, you know, they seem very friendly. When I had sat down against my opponent, the guy to my right, we were just having some random conversation. The guy on my right playing like another match against another person, he's like, wait, did you guys find a deck? And we're like, what are you talking about? And my opponent makes some stupid joke about, oh yeah, man, I see the deck. It's right here. And he's like pretending he's high. He's like, do you got the shrooms too? And I'm like laughing with him. And we're just joking around. And then we found out that those people on our right, their deck actually gotten stolen. And that was like, oh, that was super awkward. So, but whatever, we're having like a jovial match between us. And he seems like a really cool guy. And so we're playing. And game one, I get him with a Selfless Spirit or a Spellqueller and with an Avacyn. And he's, you know, a little disappointed. And I can kind of see his demeanor during sideboarding is a little bit down. So I kind of crack a joke and he's like right back with me. We're just having a good match, right? Good, clean, fun. I know we just lost our last round. My deck didn't come out of the gates really. And I was like, the pressure's off. Like we're going to 3-0 easily. We can't top four, but who cares? So that's happening. So Sammy, while this has been going on, I believe he lost game one, but one of the things that happened in game one, and this is crucial to part of the scumbag story, was it was turn three and his opponent, had cast a turn two creature, right? And Sammy turn three played a Brazen Wolves. So that's the whole board. Sammy's Brazen Wolves, 2/3 creature, and his opponent's 2/2. So his opponent untaps, draws, thinks for a second, and attacks with his 2/2. Without hesitating, Sammy just blocks. Actually, this must have been day one. I apologize. Whatever. Sammy just snap blocks with the Brazen Wolves. Just like block. Okay? So the guy like stares at him, paused for a second, and is kind of like, whoa, what just happened? He seriously blocked my 2/2 with his Brazen Wolves as if the Brazen Wolves itself had been like, you know, some bomb creature, right? So the guy just bends his 2/2 and plays a post-combat 2/3 creature of his own and passes the turn. So Sammy's like, you know, he's happy with how this exchange went, right? Because the guy just attacked and he blocked. And he's telling me after, like, why wouldn't I block? If he has a trick, I'm going to get the trick out. So then the next turn, Sammy plays a Niblis. So yeah, this must have been day one. I apologize. It was other flash creatures that I beat this guy with. But he plays a Niblis of Frost, and the guy thinks on his next turn and chooses not to attack with the 2/3, even though Sammy would never in a million years block with the Niblis, but he'd shown the previous turn that he was willing to, you know, chump check, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So Sammy is like super happy with himself, right? And he's kind of like beaming, I can tell, but you know, things happen and he ends up losing the game. And the guy in sideboarding is telling his teammate, my opponent, that he's like, oh yeah, I did a stupid attack that I didn't think he'd ever block. And Sammy says to me, why wouldn't I block it? He's like, well, because you just lose it to a trick. And Sammy's like, well, but I kind of want the trick out of your hand, don't I? And he says, he's like, well, I just never block it with the Niblis and you didn't attack the next turn. And the guy's like, oh, whatever, it's fine. So that was the extent of their verbal interaction. They didn't speak another word until the end of the match. Okay. So
yeah.
Fast forward, matches play out. Ocho ends up losing his match. I go to really deep into game three. I thought this was the blue-white deck because he was like a little complaining about rares, but I drew my only two rares in my green-white deck. That's what I was playing. And I beat him with the two rares in game one, and I beat him with the two rares in game three. So he's, you know, a little disappointed. So it's all kind of coming down to Sammy against his opponent. Now, one thing about Sammy is at the end of every single match, this has happened every single round, when we win or lose, he often like tries to shake all three opponents' members' hands. Like, just, you know, it's just kind of like whatever.
Okay.
He just does that, right? Win or lose. So in the end of the game, the guy kind of makes a few blunders and Sammy ends up pulling it out. I think he top decks something and he ends up winning. And as soon as he wins, he like kind of sighs relieved and he reaches his hand out and says, good game. And his opponent just shakes his head like no. And Sammy says, what, are you not going to shake my hand? And the guy says, no, man, I'm not going to shake your hand. And I'm like sitting there and this is a team event. So I was about to reach out and shake like my opponent's hand. But like now we're both kind of like, what the hell? And Sammy's like, why are you not going to shake my hand? And I'm thinking, oh my God, I have to like do some damage control here right now. And the guy's like, because you're a dick. I'm not going to shake your hand. You're a total dick. And I'm like, is this seriously happening? Like, really? So Sammy's like, wait, what? And the guy's teammate's like, hey, whoa, dude, calm down. He's like, no, I don't care. This guy's a dick. I'm not shaking his hand. And Sammy's like, what did I do? How am I a dick? He's like, you made fun of me the whole match. You just made fun of me the whole match. And I'm thinking back to what this guy could be talking about. And I mentioned the verbal interaction. And another thing that happened like towards the end of the game was the guy tapped out to cast something. And Sammy was like, wait, you're a 13? And he's like, yeah. And Sammy starts like, Sammy taps the table and like counting his mana for his Virdant Pact Outcast. And he's like tapping it. And then he's like, 13, right? And then he taps it and then he does the attack. So maybe the guy thought he was like, you know, being a dick about it, but really he was just doing math to make sure that he didn't blunder. So then the third teammate's like, wait, what's going on? And then the middle teammate's like, this guy's a dick. I'm not shaking his hand. And my opponent's looking at me like, I don't know what to do. So it was just this awkward, gross. And Ochoa has this look on his face like, what is happening? So I like say to my opponent, like, oh, well, we should probably sign the slip. And he's like, oh, yeah. So he like signs it and he's like, oh, well, good game, man. He kind of looks at his friend and reaches his hand out to me. And then Sammy like reaches his hand out to him because he shakes everyone's hands. And so then the guy across from me shakes Sammy's hand, and then Sammy reaches the guy on the left, and that guy shakes his hand, and then Sammy looks like straight at the guy in the middle, and he's just like, no, I'm out. Like, he's not going to shake his hand. So I'm like, Sammy, let's just go. He's like, I don't care what the big deal is. And I'm thinking, oh my God. I'm like, Sammy, let's just go hand the match slip in. Like, let's just go kind of thing. So I make some passing comment to my opponent, something like, well, dude, if you get any more of those shrooms, like, let me know. And he then bursts out a laugh and it was like, you know, cut the tension kind of moment. But I'm like, Sammy, let's just go. Let's just walk away. And he's like, I want to know why he won't shake my hand. I'm like, accosting him is not the way to figure it out. Let's just go. So that was our scumbag experience. It's the first time in my entire life that I've been no-cert on a handshake, and it wasn't even me, but it was my team mates, and it felt gross. So younger Doug, who's made some poor mistakes and not shaken people's hands I thought were being dicks, especially ones that were being dicks, I wish I could tell him, just shake their hand and move on in your life. Like, I've done that twice before. I remember it vividly, and I wish I could take it back.
James, do you have any scumbag stories?
I mean, well, I told you about
that one. Yeah,
would you count that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so
I mean, it's kind of a culture. It's kind of like, yeah, you should. Yeah.
Yeah. So on day one, I guess I should probably withhold details, I don't know, about the person involved. My opponent, basically the entire match from the very beginning actually had this unbelievable urgency about him where you know, even when there was like 48 minutes on the clock, if you were going to make a move, he was giving you sort of that face like, what? What are you doing? Come on. And he's making sort of like, he's always leaving his hand out, making that sort of like, do it gesture with his, like moving his fingers back towards his hand or like rolling his wrist or whatever, you know, as in like get along with it or whatever, even if you're not taking that long to think about things. So that was pretty annoying from the start. But then the other two matches within our match had ended and it was down to just us. And I should also say that at multiple times I had tried to sort of overcome this tension that he was creating by making different little, not even necessarily jokes, but just comments like he played three Sigurdian priests in game one. And I was like, geez, priests for days over here, and sort of chuckled. And he just looked at me like completely dead faced. And I was like, okay, never mind then. Don't admit that that's insane. And especially against like Emerge, you know, where I'm just trying to get these big creatures and rely on them. Obviously Sigurdian priest is like my nightmare. And so we're late in game three. There's like 7 minutes left on the clock, but the game has pretty much come to a head where it's going to end in like the next three turns or so would be my guess. So I don't understand why he's still like even more than ever constantly trying to rush every play that I'm making. Like, please, you need to make a play. You need to make a play. Which one part of me, I really understand, like, if it really matters to him, like, winning and not getting a draw sucks. I can understand where he's coming from with making sure that I know where the clock is at, right? But at the same time, he's trying to rules lawyer me, which seems at odds with the whole rushing me, where at one point I pointed at his noose constrictor that had a +1/+1 counter on it, and it was equipped with a true faith sensor. And I just pointed at it, and real quick, so I could make my decision faster on my turn, I just go, that's a 4/4, right? And he just looks at me and he goes, I don't have to tell you anything. And I was just like, are you serious? First you're going to tell me that I need to play faster, and then you're going to purposely just like withhold information to make me have to pick up your cards and read them. It's like, you got to pick a priority, dude. Which one is it going to be? You know that I'm going to read the card because I'm not an idiot. So like, why would you just say that to me just to be like, oh, look at me. I know all the rules and I know that I don't have to tell you what its power and toughness are. Like, that was very unpleasant to me. And then ultimately, what was worse was I fell into his trap and I made a play too quickly without thinking about it. And that play like single-handedly cost me that game and thus the match. And that's really the only thing on the whole weekend that I was ever salty about, was that I let him like get the better of me, because I think that he just had realized that my deck was much better than his and that he needed to just get the psychological element in play if he was ever going to have a chance at winning. So, oh well.
So, question for Doug and Jeremy. Being that Jeremy, you're the judge, and Doug, you're the, like, you have just a bunch
Doug's
of...
Doug's a judge, too.
Are you a judge?
Yeah, I'm a judge.
Okay, sweet.
He's a judge!
In this situation, can you call a... Would a proper response be pause the game, call a judge, and ask them to watch for slow play?
Okay, well, before you judge, can I just say something real quickly? Because it might, like, I think this guy was not trying to make you play faster. I think he was just trying to get in your head.
Yeah.
It's a common strategy people use. So.
Oh, no. I know that was the case. That's okay. What I'm saying is that I know he was trying to get into my head because he realized he was not going to be able to win by just playing a game of Magic.
I don't know if I agree with. Maybe he just was trying to get into your head because he either felt like you were a lesser player, he felt like he does this to a lot of people, he felt like it's a free roll to try and get in someone's head. Like, I wouldn't, you know, try to presume that he thought he couldn't win.
Yeah. And I guess.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, there are players that just, they bully. That's just.
Yeah, totally.
That's
a thing you'll see at GPs all the time.
Yeah.
Now, my question is whether or not you are actually playing slow. which I know, James, like, James, I don't believe you were playing slow at all, and I do believe that it was the case that, like, he was trying to do something, and James was wise to the whole thing. But I guess my question is, can a response to this in this situation be to call a judge to watch for slow play, just so you have that sort of, like, hey, I'm not going to play your game?
Well, the thing is that doesn't do anything.
Okay.
You understand that it's not about the person playing slow. It's about the opponent trying to dictate pace of play, trying to intimidate, trying to increase his presence over the other player. He's trying to dominate that player. So he doesn't need to, he's not saying that you're not respecting the rules. So having somebody there to vouch for you respecting the rules doesn't really do anything, unless maybe it builds your own confidence.
Yeah, that's more what I'm talking about.
Yeah, like if you're actually concerned that you're not keeping up or anything like that, you can do that. But at the same time, are you going to do that? If you're feeling like you're slow playing, are you going to call the judge over to make sure that you're not slow playing? Or maybe it's a mental boost type thing. Like, I don't know. It's one of those weird spots where the guy's just getting on top of you. Now, if he sits there and starts doing things that are rude and starts trying to misrepresent things, then you might want to get the judge called in to say, okay, well, now this guy's kind of doing some stuff sketchy. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't, but maybe I just don't know well enough. So you kind of bring the judge in, and just at least you have something set there that if the person takes a step over the line, then you have some sort of background, like some sort of case already started, uh-huh, to say that this person's doing whatever the case may be. And maybe the judge just says, say, like, let's all have a good time, and walks away, and I don't know, maybe gets through to your opponent, but chances are it's not going to. Chances are that's the way that person plays Magic. They take it very, very seriously, and that's the way that they handle it. And that's why we have scumbag stories.
Yeah, and I've had situations like this before, and I don't know if it's the appropriate response, but honestly, my response when this happens every time is I start being a little bit more deliberate than I normally am, because I'm a fast player and a fast thinker, usually. So I like playing at a quick pace, and I do feel like sometimes I gain an advantage by that. I don't urge my opponents to, but people, just humans, have this like tendency to want to match other people's body language, pace, tone. Like, it's just a thing we do. When one person's getting amped, you'll see another person get amped. So when people are doing this to me, I often will just kind of draw my card, think a little bit longer than I normally would, within reason, not slow playing, right? And it's almost like the counter troll, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And it definitely will avoid...
Yeah.
I was going to say, it will definitely avoid what you described as the ending, which sadly I was hoping wasn't the punchline, because that's kind of, I feel like, exactly what this guy was trying to do, was have you make that mistake, and it sounds like he succeeded. Because he's a scumbag.
Scummy scumbag.
Although, fortunately, even though his team made day two, I know that they did not finish nearly as well as us. So ultimately, and that's the thing, is like, for me personally, is, yeah, there was the it's unfortunate to have that failing where you say, like, geez, I fell right into this like obvious trap that I even knew was there, and basically had like commented to my teammates who were done that I knew that was what he was doing. But in the long run, it was a benefit, because then the entire rest of that weekend, I said to myself, you know, like, no one is going to shake me the rest of this event, because I knew how bad it felt to have somebody like mess with my my play or whatever.
You wrecked your moxie.
Yeah.
Yeah, those learning experiences are really what GPs are about for me, is just kind of getting yourself in different scenarios at a competitive level that you normally wouldn't, and kind of learning to deal through them. One that, like, now I've had come up multiple times recently in my professional or competitive Magic days, like day twos or GPs or whatever, is the opponent that encroaches on your play space. And I had a guy recently who, he was like playing cards like so far forward that I just had no space. And so I literally reached my hands over and just pushed all of his creatures back. And he said, please don't touch my cards. And I said, okay, keep them on that half of the table and I won't. And I just was like, I'm just not gonna take this shit. Like, there's no, and he kind of gives me this look like he cannot believe I just touched his cards. And like, you know, I'm just like, one of my opponents this tournament, he had his graveyard in just the most strange place, and I was parsing in his exile, but his graveyard had two cards that mattered because he's a Delirium deck. So I picked his graveyard up and moved it. He said, "Why are you moving my graveyard?" I was like, "Keep it by your graveyard. Like, I'm not going to let you use these tricks that you have to try and, you know, screw me up. And if that happens and you'd like to call a judge and have the judge explain to me that you can keep your graveyard, like, you know, next to your shoelaces on the ground, then sure, I'll listen to a judge, but you're not going to tell me this. You're not going to push me around at a Magic table." So.
Yeah. So what's next for you guys?
For me this weekend, there's just like a GPT, just something they go to and play sanctioned Magic on Saturday. That's Modern at an LGS. And then that's really more the warm up though for, Sunday. There's a Modern PPTQ at Yeti Gaming in Crestwood, so I'll be going to, hoping to do well, obviously. So
yeah, Doug, what's your event?
I don't know if I'm going to be hitting up any PPTQs. I kind of have a busy schedule. I started university again recently, but I changed my schedule so that I have every Monday and Friday off for GP hunting. So I'm going to be going to GP Atlanta coming up here in October 7th or whatever it is that weekend, and then Pro Tour Hawaii on the 14th or whatever, 14th to 16th.
So will Atlanta require like three flights and a bus?
No, that was the student savings discount.
Okay.
I can save $200 by doing this crazy flight. Cause when you do Google flights, you can just click, look at nearby airports. And I kind of got into the Atlanta flight situation later than I would have hoped. The team kind of formed itself on the drive back from Portland, which I got a pro point at, and kind of made the decision that I'm going to push for pro points this year. I've never tried to get pro points. I've just kind of had seasons with 7 or 9, or last season I had like 13 or whatever. And it was like, I've never actually, you know, consciously started a season with, yeah, this is the year that I will end up as either a silver pro or higher. So I kind of got into Atlanta a little late, or Louisville a little late to the party. So I had to do some MacGyvering to get myself there on time for cheap.
And Doug, I ask you this because there's a funny coincidence going on here. So you have a bachelor's degree, correct?
Yeah, I have a Bachelor of Arts drama major.
Okay, so that's another funny coincidence. So, and you are going back to university to do what exactly?
I'm taking an after degree. We offer a program here in Canada that you get a two-year after degree that you need a B.Ed, or that you need a B.A. or B.S., and you can then get a Bachelor of Education. So the goal is to be a high school drama teacher, or I guess a secondary, I think you guys call it, drama teacher.
Oh my God, you and James are literally doing the exact same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So except James is five spaces higher than you.
I mean, he's like three spaces higher than me. If he was five, he would have actually, you know, qualified for the Pro Tour, right?
Ooh. Oh,
zing.
He would have been able to see you in Hawaii.
No, Dublin. He would have been in Dublin, but...
it would have been Dublin. Oh, okay. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we had the same record, so I don't feel too bad. I got the same amount of pro points.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting coincidence with drama and secondary education and becoming drama teachers.
That's dope.
Yeah. I will say on that subject that I did feel sort of shafted by the lack of getting a PT invite just because of the combination of circumstances that, you know, they, in my opinion, they have that 36-point rule as a way of ensuring that people that just miss top eight of an individual GP, that they sort of have this way of softening the blow to say, well, you didn't make the top eight, but you got a Pro Tour invite anyway. So isn't that nice? But a team sealed GP is a full round less. So you already have missed out on three potential points to get to 36. And then there's the fact that even though there's 1,200 players, which is, you know, like a reasonable amount for a GP, it might as well be 400 players because that's how the pairings all shake out, right? And so as a result, because there's less people and there's that many rounds, it's harder to maintain a good record. It's just like at the Pro Tour, you know, it's less people, but a lot of rounds. So going X4 is still really good, as opposed to at a GP, X4 is terrible, right? So, or not terrible, but it's not where you want to be. And so it just felt sort of lame that the only team that got more than 36 points was the team that was in first after the Swiss, and to be right on the outside of the like single elimination cut and not have that sort of consolation prize just was like, I feel like we earned it. Like, we played against all these like high level players and did really well. And like, oh, you know, we got money, you know, like that's obviously nice.
I mean, I don't want to be the Debbie Downer here, but 36 points at a Grand Prix to get your Pro Tour invite that you're discussing, it's actually 39 points to get a Pro Tour invite. And 39 points is how many? Yeah, I just want to ask, 39 points is how many losses?
That's two.
It's two losses. Right. So they give Pro Tour invites to people with two losses or less. Because if you have two losses and you don't top eight, something's kind of going on that's a little wonky. In a team GP, if you have two losses, you got your Pro Tour invite. So I do not agree that people with three losses should get invites unless they get there on tiebreakers like I did at GP Toronto. I think two losses is the right cut, and they don't have to currently, you know, change their system, since the number of players that was capped at this event was going to lead to, you know, teams with two losses or 36 points getting Pro Tour invites. So I feel like it's a wash. I actually think these ones are easier because you only need 12 wins instead of 13 wins. But
that's fair. Yeah, I mean, everything that I say has to be taken with a grain of salt because I
totally
play so few high-level events. So
yeah, and I hate to be that guy that's just like, but yeah, three losses, I think three pro points for three losses in only 14 rounds is like such a blessing. Like I even felt like we didn't fully earn our cash and pro points. I felt like I had more that I needed to, you know, prove that I deserved three pro points in cash. But yeah.
Well, it's one of those things that take what you did get from it. Like, I know you didn't get your pro tour invite, but I go back to my very first GP, and that was Salt Lake City. And it wasn't even in the main event. It was in a grinder. That in the finals, I got to play against Dave Williams. And essentially what it came down to is we got to game three, and it was a top deck war, and he was able to edge it out. But we played very, very close games, and I was able to play with him. And I respected him. He was a guy I was seeing in videos and seeing all this stuff on the websites, on the articles, and he's doing all these crazy things, and he's sitting next to Ifro and stuff like that. And I'm losing my mind because I'm sitting in this hall. It's the last grinder. There's five people in the room. Two of them are judges. It's me and him, and he's got Ifro there. And I'm just like, just blowing my mind that I'm playing a game with this guy. And I didn't do very well in the tournament. I lost. I didn't make my day two or anything like that. But I went home feeling like I can play with these guys, like these big names. I can sit and play with them. And it helped me in my next tournament. And it's funny because the other thing we were talking about where, you know, it's the whole, wow, you're going to play against a pro. The very next GP I go to is my Vancouver that I had great success at. And I remember late in day one, I'm undefeated. And I turned to Doug saying like, oh, man, I'm going to get like some sort of feature match against some big pro. And I'm going to punt horribly and everyone's going to laugh at me. And Doug just looked at me. He's like, well, no, you're going to get a feature match against a pro. You're going to stomp them and everyone's going to like pat your back for it. Like, it's going to be awesome. And it was just like, it's those little moments where, you know, you talked about with your teammates and stuff like that. Sometimes you got to pump them up and stuff. But at the same time, like, you just went stomping people that everybody knows their name. If you were the feature match, you were the
everybody we know versus guy we don't know, and guy we don't know keeps winning. What the heck's going on here? So that's cool. Like, it's good to be the Giant Slayer and take that with you to the next tournament and go and stomp. And the next time you get paired up against someone like that, just who cares? I've done it before. You know, like, that's the one thing, is that you've had success. You can always count on having that success at the next tournament. You don't have to worry about fighting the Giant anymore, because you know what? The Giants ain't so big anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Jeremy. Like, I remember, I can tell you that my experience being on the coverage team and getting to witness that the star effect of players who sit down against these pros and then they automatically lose. They just lose before they even start playing, because they're like, oh, I'm playing against Ifro, or I'm playing against John Finkel, or I'm playing against LSV, or whoever they happen to be playing, whoever the pro is. And you just, by doing that more and actually winning and being successful, you just get to be, get to a point where that is not, doesn't affect you at all. It's just another day at the office. So I can definitely tell you that I'm lucky, because I've been on the coverage team and I play against great players constantly, at, you know, coverage drafts and stuff. And, you know, like, that has helped me, and I'm glad that you had that experience, so that you can take that, what Jeremy said, that confidence, and into the next event and just sit down across from whoever and be like, all right, you ready to play Magic?
Yeah. You know, for what it's worth, it didn't all come in one dose, because, Doug, how would you describe me at dinner after GP Vancouver?
Frenetic.
Well, there was that, and the fact that, like, we're having dinner with all these pros, and I'm just like, oh, my God! But that's, I was keeping why you were quiet. Frenetic.
you had this energy about you where you're just kind of, you're almost vibrating. Like, oh, my God, I can't believe we're here. Where, like, look to my left, and Shahar Shenhar is, like, stealing the meat off a plate of whatever the... What's the guy's name? He does coverage for Star City now. He was almost rookie of the year.
Matthias.
Or he was rookie. Yeah, Matthias Hines. Yeah,
And they're sitting there arguing whether or not Shahar should have traded Jay for X in a gamble over what the waiter's name would be at the restaurant.
Yeah, we gambled on what letter, like, basically you bet letters on what the waiter's name will be, and Jay, like, is that the nut high letter or not? Which, I mean, look at this call. Jay is clearly the winner, as I said. But M is up there in the argument because Muhammad is the most popular name in the world, so...
So they're talking about
this happened at dinner, Matt.
Off of it. And they spent like 20 minutes going on. I'm just like, who are these sickos? And then I understood, like, the after Magic, what all kind of fun and shenanigans can happen, which led to nights of being up until 4 o'clock in the morning playing dice with Magic pros in your hotel room, getting threatened to be thrown out of the hotel, only to be told, don't worry, guys, we got you covered. We got a hotel just down the street.
Oh, James, so you played against Haynes' team. Did you play against Haynes?
Me? Yeah.
Did you roll his dice? Please tell me you didn't roll his dice.
He doesn't bust that out of Grand Prix, Matt.
I know.
He's a savage scumbag in his personal life. But yes. He is a very, very above the belt player in his Magic.
Oh, yeah, life. Absolutely.
Very noble player.
He has two loaded dice that always roll, like, the number four, and so he says, do you want to roll odd or even for $20? And you say yes, and if you say odd, he rolls... Or no, they always roll three. So if you say odd, he rolls one, or two dice. If you say even, he rolls one.
Yeah.
It's the straight gotcha, and then he's like, well, that was a $20 lesson, so...
I just remember the Mr. Infinite where he rolls him up, and Mr. Infinite's like, okay, double or nothing, and we're just like, no. Oh, my.
All right, Doug, you want to hang out for the contest?
I mean, yeah, I'm, I have not sadly received the text back. I was expecting a 10, so here we are.
That is,
It's sorry, coming, dude. Don't worry.
Yeah.
No,
I believe.
Don't be it's sorry.
Coming. I believe.
I got nothing to worry about.
So, this last 2 weeks ago, we had the art contest, or the 20 questions, followed by the very obvious art hint. That was too obvious, I agree. So the card in question was, in fact, Creature Bond. And so we had 10 responses, and as per usual, I am going to choose a random one from from among them and send you something nice.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Would you feel so compelled as to just list one notable name from the 10?
Yeah. AJ Anderson.
Oh, that's not what I was going for.
Yeah.
He wants his tires pumped.
What's my number? What number am I hoping you roll? Is it a Hay Knights?
A number between 1 and 10. All right. So basically, there are 10 of you. I'm going to start. The bottom is number 1. The top is number 10. And I'm just going to go to random.org and roll a D10, a virtual D10. Oh, it's 10. So that is at the top. And it is Bullseye. All right, Bullseye. You won. So send your email me your information to mattjmendoza@gmail.com, and please put a team contest in the title so that I can figure out, so I can easily find your email when I send out the stuff. Sorry, Doug. Da-da-da. You want to know what number you were?
No, I don't want to know.
Number 9.
Oh!
But you had as equal chance to win or lose as everybody else.
So. Yeah, the way random works is 9 is not any closer to 10 than,
oh, I know.
Than 1 is.
At least his random.org, like when he did this on the radio, you know, I guess it's about as legit as the one that you did for that draft that one time, Doug.
Oh my god, are you seriously bringing that back up?
Well, I got you.
Basically, we did a draft, and I gave a screen recording of me randoming the order for the draft. But I screwed up my where I like held the video in my screen because I had OBS set up to, you know, only parse a certain part of my screen.
Uh-huh.
So the part where it actually shows, literally the only part that you don't see is the part where the numbers spit out. So I'm like typing in the names and saying like, Jeremy Schofield, you are. And then I'm like, oh, you're number 4, and slot you in. And then, oh, Josh Roach, where are you? Oh, you're number 2. Doug Potter, where did you end up? Oh, number 1. And seriously, it was all legit, but I ended up number 1 in the Modern Road to Sue draft, and they couldn't see it. And I got endlessly made fun of for that.
It was awesome, though, because it was perfect to the point that you could see him click the button, but you couldn't see the result. It was
and I ended up number 1 of all possible places in all of Modern, which, by the way, do you know the correct answer, James, on what you pick first pick in all of Modern in a draft,
in like legal cards in Modern?
Yes, you're playing Modern, you can draft one card. putting you to the test.
I've never drafted in that sort of setting before.
You're playing Modern Constructed.
Matt, do you know? Do you have an answer? I guess it's obvious.
It could be Lightning Bolt. It's the most played card in Modern.
That's what I was going to guess. It just felt too obvious, I guess.
That was my instinct as well.
No, I was like, surely it's not Lightning Bolt. Like, surely it couldn't be.
Oh, it is definitely Lightning Bolt.
So, this week's contest, I tagged James in this week also, because I know one person who loves games and contests more than me. It is James. So, we're going to do 2 rounds of the art game. And between us, so we're going to fail at guessing some art, Doug, Jeremy, and I. And then the third one is going to be for you, the listeners. And then what you'll do is James will describe a piece of artwork, and he'll tell you one parameter, I think. It's either modern legal or not. Completely random. And then you guess in the comments what card you think it is. I choose from among the right answers. Simple as that.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Can I do one of them as well in the, like, we're going to do two here?
Yeah, absolutely. So what the parameter I've told James was modern legal.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if you can. James, did you figure out if you can do that with Magic Cards and Info? Pick a random modern card?
Oh, I don't know how to do that, but the first, but when I clicked random, the first card that came up was modern legal, so.
Okay. We'll go with that. So, James, card number one.
All right, so unfortunately, for the sake of fun, I feel like this one's pretty easy.
well, we got Doug on the cast, so you can't really say that anything is really easy.
Okay.
It's because it's just implied, like, I'm going to drill it. That's what he's getting at.
Okay.
So anyhow, we have a large wooden hand.
Gauntlet of Power.
No,
sorry, carry on.
I don't think that's modern legal.
Yeah.
It's going to be as soon as the inventions come out, right? No, I'm just joking. Carry on.
So it's stretching towards us as the person looking at the card. When I say it's wooden, I mean sort of like composed of roots. So it's like wiry in appearance, but wooden. Reaching toward us. And there's some spirits sort of floating around it. They look like a combination of jellyfish and flowers. And there's three spirits on it. In the background, the hand is emerging from a grove.
I know what it is.
Oh, it's Kamigawa.
It's Kodama's Reach.
Kodama's Reach.
Yep.
I kept thinking it was Kodama's Reach. I don't know if you could hear me, like, typing in the background.
Were you typing? Were you cheating?
Yeah,
you can't
cheat. I wasn't cheating.
You can't cheat.
What do you mean?
You can't
cheat. You can't search. I was trying to listen.
I know I listened, but I didn't know what it was card. I was trying to call Kodama's Reach. I don't think that's a card. So I was just making sure I had the right name.
There's like a 50% chance you're going to mispronounce whatever it is. So
yes, absolutely. So I tried.
And see, here I was thinking it was Scrabbling Claws.
What?
That's not wooden.
It wouldn't have been Scrabbling Claws. Like, that's actually got like a petrified.
Scrabbling Claws. That's like the Scrabbling Claws.
Just trying to reduce the tension, just 50%. Like the mushroom joke.
Hashtag mushrooms.
So, Doug, what's your card?
Which criteria would you like
so
me to
go to
have?
magiccards.info.
Oh, I'm randoming. I've randomed a bunch of times. Do you want me to stop on one?
Modern legal card.
You want modern legal? Okay, because yeah. I definitely had a non-modern legal card right there. I was so excited to.
Was it Gauntlets of Power?
Hey, no, it wasn't. It was Jared's Verdict.
That's a good one.
I would have known that.
Okay, here we go. I need to zoom in on this one. Let's get fancy. So, on my artwork, there is a very, very, very large fellow. He has quite the beard and lengthy hair. He's, in fact, taller than the tree line that you can see in the foreground of this picture.
Inferno Titan.
The two trees are very luscious greens, and they perfectly contrast the blues and whites you see in the sky with the clouds. The character is large in stature because he is a sort of mythical, large.
He's a giant
humanoid. He's a giant. So I was trying to be semi vague.
Is it a primeval titan?
No, it's not a titan, it's a giant.
A humanoid giant. He looks like a man. His left nipple is exposed, and his undergarments or his pants, I can't quite tell what they are, look like they are made of burlap or are pleated.
no.
So I'm not allowed to like search a name of a card to look at the art. That's I just have to guess it, right?
No.
Okay, so is this Stone Hearth Giant?
It is not.
No, it's not Hamlet Back. It's not Stone Hearth. It's the one. I think it's like a Lord. Is it Thundercloud Shaman?
It is not. It's
no, Thundercloud Shaman is a side profile, and he's standing over trees.
Think of the blues and whites in the sky. It's a very bright kind of. It's not a chaotic color when I'm looking at it. He's just kind of standing there, pensively with his right hand on his chin, stroking his beard and nipple exposed, very much so exposed.
I think like a side profile. I think it's a white giant.
Ooh, interesting. I'll give you a little bit of a hint.
No hints.
Okay. Is he pensive? It wasn't going to help
pensive
you at all.
Giant? Is there a pensive giant?
He is very pensive.
Is there a pensive giant? I can't remember if that's a card name. I don't know card names, so this is like actually the worst. No pensive miniatures.
No.
Is it Cloud Goat Ranger?
No. Nope. No, Cloud Goat Ranger is about the people.
Man, I'm fairly certain I have like the art just right in my head. I know.
I can see the card. I just can't remember what the heck the name of it is. That's why I went with Stonehearth, because I remember that giant's name.
Yeah, it's not Baldwyr Intimidators. I have to tap out. I don't know.
No, I'm out.
Sounds like it's one of my blind spots when I wasn't playing, so I don't think I know it.
I wish his left nipple was in my blind spot.
Hey-o!
Yes, it's from Lorwyn. I was going to say he is a wizard, Harry. That's what I was going to say. But being a giant wizard doesn't help you at all. That's why it's like such a soft hint.
Yeah.
You guys all give him?
Yeah, that was right when I stopped playing years ago.
Well, you missed out on the luscious Arbiter of Nolridge.
Ah. I'm looking this one up. Because... I'm fairly certain
that he's not wearing a shirt.
He's not wearing a shirt. Okay, yep. Bulk? Uncommon, right?
No, this guy's like straight rare.
Oh, it's rare. Yeah, it's a bulk rare. Okay. All right. So, James.
Oh, yeah.
Paint for me a picture.
All right, one second.
Do clarify, though, whether it is modern legal or vintage legal.
Vintage legal.
Not even vintage legal. Just clarify if it's modern or not.
It is not modern legal.
Because all modern legal cards are pretty much vintage legal.
Oh, wait. Actually, no. I apologize. It is apparently legal and modern.
Okay.
Ooh, there's a spicy little subtle hint for some people.
Spice! Okie dokie. So, we have two dragons that seem to be engaged in combat at the top of a volcano. Both of them are pretty much completely orange, and their wings are shaded at the top, but they almost look as though they are molten as the lava beneath them. And there's dark storm clouds overhead, but literally like the only colors in this art are shades of orange and black. That's it. There's no other colors whatsoever.
Okay. And
one dragon has its wings fully spread, as though it's sort of leaping at the other dragon, and the other dragon is sort of looking like it's bracing for impact, perhaps. It's beneath the upper dragon, and its head is cocked back. And yeah, I don't really know what else to describe. It's actually a pretty minimalist art, I would say. In terms of, there's just not a lot going on in there. So,
but it's very orange.
Oh yes,
so orange. All right.
Okay.
Well,
yes, I was right. I typed my guess. Yes. What do I win, Matt? You haven't sent me my first two.
Well, I mail them out like once a month, so you know. You'll get yours eventually, if at all.
That hint is actually what gave it to me, I'm not going to lie. So people need to go re-listen to the subtle hint.
Yeah.
So subtle.
So if you think you know what that card is, comment on this week's episode on Mana Deprived. And, yeah. I'll pick them from among the winners, or the correct guesses, and you will be the winner for next week's contest. So, Jeremy, are you doing anything Magic-related this week? Or are you still reeling, trying to get back into your schedule?
Yeah, so I had to skip this weekend because I was home on the weekend, and just too much stuff going on in the house getting ready for work again. It turns out I'm actually going to be shipping off up north again, so I'll be doing that thing until Christmas, so...
Oh, joy.
It's joy. It's 10 and 4, so I will have every second weekend to line some stuff up. And this weekend, we're trying to finish up the job that I was on before I went to Portugal so that I can leave immediately to go to the next job. So it looks like I might have to work through the weekend. So chances are I'm not going to get to do anything magic this weekend. Although, depending on how Sunday goes, maybe I'll try and fit something in. But honestly, if I'm going to be working Saturday, I'd rather spend the time with my kid because my daughter's awesome. Aside from that, then it'll just be looking at the schedule and trying to figure out what's going to be lining up for PPTQs and stuff like that. So I'd like to jam some dredge because everybody's doing it and I'm not, and that makes me sad.
That is understandable.
Yeah. So that's that. It was really odd in Portugal. Just never found a chance to go to a card store. The hours in that country are strange. It's like they work 6 to 8 hour days and they all take 2 hour lunches.
Oh, okay.
So from 12 until 2, everything's closed.
Okay.
It blows my mind.
Siesta, right? I mean,
it is. It is time for a siesta, apparently. So. And nothing's open on the weekends, and even the card shops close early. So every time we were in a large enough city that would have a hobby store, it was always just closed. And it's hilarious because restaurants don't open till like 8 o'clock at night. So it's just a bizarre place where everything happens in the evening, but none of the stuff that I would normally, when you actually get out, everything that you want to buy is closed. It's a really strange place because nobody knows how to make money there. Or maybe they know and they just don't care.
Okay.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
That is an interesting observation.
Yes, that's the one thing. And everyone I talked to who's there said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I had always been jokingly cheering for a Portuguese league soccer team. Because in Portugal, the league that they have has three big teams. And I work with a lot of Portuguese guys. And they all affiliate under one of the three teams. So I had talked to one of the guys and said, well, who's number 4? And he gave me a team. So when I went out there, it's like, well, I cheer for this team. I'm going to go see this team. So we jump in the car and we drive 2 hours to go see a Braga game. And when I get to this Braga game, I'm like, I'm going to get a jersey, obviously. And they didn't have merchandise at the game.
Huh.
There was no merchandise. They have this fantastic, massive stadium, but you can't buy a jersey. Everyone's wearing them because they had to go to a store in downtown Braga to buy the jersey. And it was pretty funny when we got there. They're like, you're from this town that's 2 hours away. What are you doing buying a jersey? That's amazing. And I turned to my wife and she told me the story. I'm like, why didn't you tell her we were from Canada? They would have rolled out the red carpet for us. It's like blowing their minds over the fact that someone else from northern Portugal bought their jersey. So I thought it was just really bizarre that the country everywhere, you have this money. Everything is so inexpensive. And even when you want to buy it, you just can't. It's very big change of pace, but wonderful country. Wonderful country. So laid back, so relaxed. Wonderful people, beautiful people. Water, sun. It's so green. I did not think that Portugal would be such a green country. There's trees everywhere. It's like driving through BC, Doug.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds. I love driving through BC.
Oh, man. And the roads are insane. You get on the highway, it's like 120. It has minimum speeds on the different lanes. So if you're in the far left lane, you're going less than 90, you get a ticket. So the lanes are actually set up with speeds. And driving down the highway at like 150 because the people in the car want to drive 150. And the cops blow by us at 180. Don't even look. They just go. And pretty much the rule is if you're going faster than them, they'll probably stop you. But they're in a rush, so they got somewhere to be. So they drive really fast in the country as well.
Sweet.
Yeah. But didn't get any chance to play Magic. Saw some wonderful historical sites. Beautiful country. Land is so cheap there. Wouldn't be surprised if I bought a condo or something there in the next 5 years, just to even have as like a vacation rental, because the places, the land, the pop, everything, it's so inexpensive.
Well, it's time to build a game store that has American hours.
Yeah, if I did it out in the middle of nowhere, nobody would come because they'd think we were closed, because every store is like that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you were justly compensated for your lack of magical card playing.
Yes, the only time cards really came up, I was going to go to a tournament. My daughter got sick, so we couldn't make the trip into Lisbon to go to the last chance qualifier for the RPTQ. I was all set up to do that, but my daughter had a really massive fever, and we had a rental car lined up, and the rental car fell through and everything. It was just a really terrible weekend. Daughter was fine after a few days, but it took a little while for her to kind of get herself back. So missed out on that, and essentially the only talking we did was with my brother-in-law, who just recently sold his collection at a face-to-face open to face-to-face and was handsomely rewarded for it because Schmaltzy is a good man. He just wanted to look through the deck to see, and he was giving me a hard time that I was missing Expeditions. And now I get to lose even more money because everything's an Expedition now.
Yes.
Yeah. These are gorgeous, by the way. I'm actually, this is the first time they've done this, and I'm actually excited.
Okay, can we do one stupid little last game before we go?
Sure, yeah. Well, I was going to have James, do we want to go out on that? I was going to have James talk about his Cube League and stuff a little bit before we go.
Oh, okay. I thought we'd do short episodes now. Isn't that the thing now?
Well, we're only going, I mean, we're like an hour.
I thought we'd do, oh yeah, it's like an hour four. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just being bitchy because I was like, I got to go to bed because I have to wake up stupid early in the morning and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So I didn't, we can talk about Cube League. I'll just.
Yeah, we'll just briefly touch on it. James, you do a really cool thing to introduce new players to old cards and old formats. I just wanted you to talk briefly about kind of what you guys get together and do in your Tuesday Cube Leagues and how you can, you know, if you have any advice for anybody wanting to do that. So,
basically, I have always loved playing with the old cards, you know, because I started playing, I guess, like right around the release of Odyssey Block. But you know, like it sort of seems inefficient to invest in like Legacy just to have an opportunity to play with old bordered cards. Right. So, and if you play Cube, then like in terms of like Legacy Cube again, or Vintage Cube or whatever type of thing it is, a lot of the time, the more recent, more powerful cards are what end up predominantly being what makes up your cube anyway. So I decided that I wanted to start this Cube League to sort of add some stakes to our weekly drafts that we were always having at my place. And in order to put some continuity to it, we would make block cubes and then just cube through the ages so that people could see the evolution of Magic as a game and from like a design standpoint. And I actually had already had an invasion block cube for a while. That was the first cube I ever made because I had most of the cards and it was cheap and everything. So that's where we ended up starting, because I prefer as much as possible to actually play with the paper copies. And so if I was playing, you know, like Masks or Urza's cube and stuff like that, that's a lot of money. So, yeah. So I started with Invasion, and right now we're on Odyssey Block. We just started the actual Cube League, you know, like a couple months ago. We do 1 month per block. So right now we're on Odyssey, and everyone's, including myself, you know, learning how the format works as a limited environment. And it's always fun having people when they first come to like Cube League or whatever, the first time they draft these block cubes, they're looking at the cards and they're used to playing. A lot of the people that I meet from playing modern tournaments or whatever. So, they're looking at these cards and they're like, oh my God, all these cards are horrible, you know? But then once they've actually played one draft in that environment, the next week they come back and they open up a pack and they're like, these cards are insane. You know, like they have context for them finally. So they're seeing like these 4/4 flyers for 5 with a drawback, and they're like, this card's a bomb, you know. And so it's always fun having players that I meet that have really just been playing for the past couple of years or what have you, get to see them immersed in the older ways of Magic, and or play with cards like Psychotog, where they like they've never even heard of that card before.
Old friend.
And they go like, whoa, this card seems insane. And then you drop the knowledge bomb on them that, you know, that was like a number one extended deck built around that card and like a legacy card and everything. And which seems like laughable by today's standards. And so it's always fun educating the kiddos on the Magic history.
Sweet. And if somebody wanted to, I just wanted to kind of introduce that to the to our A-Team audience, because we have a lot of people who love Cube, Jay included. Where can somebody get a hold of you if they want to know what's in your cubes, or if they want to ask any questions? You're on Twitter.
I am, but I don't even know the last time that I logged into my account.
Okay.
So I'm sorry on that front. Maybe I'll start getting back onto there. But I do have a fairly unique name for finding me on Facebook. You know, I'm from... So, like, if you type me into Facebook or whatever, you can type, like, James Mellish, Truman University, or James Mellish, St. Louis, Missouri. And I can't imagine there are too many other people that would fit that description for like you for Facebook's search profiles. But yeah, I have my cubes on CubeTutor as well, and I believe my username is Mellish Camo, or maybe Mellish Camo 11 or something like that. I don't know. And they're labeled very easily, like Odyssey Cube, Cons Cube, Invasion Cube. Like some of them I've made ahead of time. Yeah, and
so can I, you do this at a local store, right?
No, at my house.
At your house, but you invite other people in if they show interest? Like, do you have like a circle of people? Like, if people reach out to you and they see that you're into this, you let them come over and cube with you?
To an extent. Like, an example is Matt Elkers, who is on my sealed team this past weekend. The way we met was I went to a draft at a LGS that I don't go to that often or whatever. And I played him in the second round, and we were just having a good time joking back and forth. He seemed like a fun guy to play against. And so afterwards we were talking, and I 3-0'd that draft, by the way.
Ooh, big baller.
mainly on the back of getting Master the Unseen, because that was Paper Forged.
So do you just win with rares? Is that your strategy?
Pretty much. So, you know, after the draft was over, we were talking about the format or whatever, and I just said to him, I'm a pretty outgoing guy, Matt, I think would agree there. And I just said, hey, are you like usually free on Tuesday nights? And he's like, yeah, actually I am. Why do you ask? And I said, well, we draft a lot at my house, and you said that you like pretty much exclusively draft, and you seem like a nice guy, so like, would you have any interest in just coming over and drafting cubes or like packs that we've won from events or whatever? And he was totally into it. And, so I got his number and invited him to the next draft or whatever. And now we hang out like every week. So
had he cubed before?
I don't know. I don't know if he'd ever played a cube before. I just know that he drafted at least once a week at that particular store was what he like ended up telling me.
But you had cubed. You obviously were cubing before that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is possible to find other players to cube with.
Most certainly.
Okay.
Do you have anyone that joins your cube league that you just can't really, you know, and enjoy their company, or you don't really like their attitude? Or
now I will state that I know where all this is going, but
what do you mean?
It's just a simple question.
We're trying to get some information for a friend of ours.
But even regardless of the fact that I know where it's going, I will say yes, I have had people that I had invited to come to cubes, and after a couple of weeks I could tell the consensus was that people didn't really like their sort of like attitude or their sort of like game etiquette. And then I just stopped inviting them. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you're allowed to do that.
Yeah. Don't you just got a cube like for the sake of cubing?
I know it's a big no. Once they're in, you know, they're in for life, but it's a blood contract.
Cube rules.
So Jeremy, your, expedition game, or
oh yeah
Masterpiece series game.
I'm not going to take credit for it or anything like that. I saw somebody ask a question on Twitter, and I thought, hey, that's a really cool question. And what it was is, if you took all the expeditions that are going to be in the new set, and you were hosting the Inventors Fair, which one would you think is the best inventor or the best invention? What would you pick?
Oh, is this a serious question? This isn't close, right? Like, there's just the most obvious answer in the world.
Go for it.
Hangerback Walker. Did you see that thing? Could you imagine having one of those things around your town? What would people think? They would bow down. They would want to ride. They would be afraid, but they'd be impressed. If I could invent that.
You know what? I think the afraid and impressed, I think, is really demonstrated in the art, because you have like this mad rabble of people who look like they are shoulder to shoulder to shoulder to like crotch to butt. They are in there tight, but nobody is standing underneath that thing. They are both in awe and fear being stepped on, for like everyone to be so crowded tightly, but there to be that open space right underneath it.
I wish I could invent that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Hangerback Walker is pretty sweet. Especially that new art. It's incredible.
In the context of the world, though, is it still, like, do we still consider that to be, like, that mind-boggling to these people that have, like, these giant airships that we've seen in other art? Like, keep in mind, I'm only just pulling up this new art to Hangerback Walker right now, so.
It is pretty badass.
Okay, it does look pretty humongous in this art.
Yeah. And, yeah, so that is A-Team 296.
Can I just say one thing before we go?
Yeah.
Yes.
I do want to say, honestly, just for the record, of all of the people that we played on the weekend, I did really think that James's team was one of the best opponents we played as far as demeanor and attitude when they won. They were both this like celebratory but not rubbing it in level. I guess we only had three people beat us, but the other losses felt a lot worse, I guess, is what I'm saying. So I did want to say kudos and shout out to your team for being awesome. It was like that level of relief but respect that was kind of blended together, and it earned the handshakes from us losers. No, I'm just like... But shout out to you guys. And
did like, Sammy T shake all of your hands?
I think it's hard for me to remember because he was already my opponent anyway, so I definitely shook his hand regardless.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. I remember thinking, like, I don't know if Sammy's going to shake the hands because, like, the way we lost was so heartbreaking. Like, just so for the record, I had Bruna in my hand with Gisela in the graveyard for six straight turns and just couldn't draw land. And I was bricking on things like drawing Avacyn was a brick. Like, that's just an awkward scenario, but that's the way the game was. So but they were great opponents. And I was like really hoping to not hear like, oh, we're so sorry you couldn't draw land. And they didn't say anything like that. They were just like happy to win. And so I just wanted to shout out you guys. That's all. That's all I had.
Aww.
Well, thank you.
So that's it. All right.
Oh.
Well, thank you guys very much for being on and listening. And we'll have more Magic content for you next week.
Thanks for having me.
I love you all.
Ouch. Wow. Wow. Oh, that is a great profile picture. Is that hat made out of tacos?
Is that hat made out of tacos?
Oh, I suddenly realized you were talking to me.
Yes.
No, I just... James. I don't know what the hell it's made out of. I found it at my farm.
Well, you'd probably know if it was made out of tacos.
That is a fair statement. That is a fair statement.
Is it made out of tacos? I don't know.
No, I don't know, but it was very delicious and was full of ground beef.
All right. Are we ready to go?